Welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And you know, we have got one week after another of value to bring to you because it's our commitment. It's a fulfillment of a daily prayer. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, that's what we're here to do as a giant overview goal, and step by step, week by week, we bring different pieces to you. And I just want to thank you for being a devoted listeners and for the opportunity to be a positive influence on your lives. We also want to thank the sponsor of our program, AdvancedLiving.com, that helps keep our show on the air. When you take a moment, you've got stress. How would you like some instant stress relief? How would you like a way to raise your energy and sleep better with no pills or drugs or intrusion? Well, check out AdvancedLiving.com and take a look at the comfort technology. We call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, a stylish digital clock that's been modified to create a harmonized energy, kind of like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. The electric pollution is mitigated. The healing vibration doctors report raised with these energies. So check out AdvancedLiving.com. All right. Well, guess what? Today we're going to have some fun. Oh, talk about creative day. We have a wonderful woman who's with us. Her name is Jolene Elise Dames, and she is a self-taught painter, photographer, poet, writer, artist, and she's both certified as a feng shui consultant and a life coach. And she began her career as a scenic artist, painting sets for movies, TV, and theaters across the country. Yeah, I know. Talk about fun. Her experience and plethora of creativity led to art directing and production design with different production companies, and her work with children as an art instructor and art director has helped influence her endeavors for children, including raising money for autism. As a photographer, she has traveled the world to capture images while writing about her experiences. As an artist, she is so creative. She's an inventor and visionary dedicated to exploring creativity in every facet. An advocate of inspiration, she dedicates her time to humanitarian issues and strives to show others a new perspective through her art. So let's welcome Jolene. Hello, Jolene.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
So excited to have you as a guest here today. What fun. Now, we covered so much. I guess it would be kind of interesting in your own terms if you'd make mention of what kind of an artist are you?
I guess primarily as a career, I paint sets for movies, television, and theater. And on my on the side, when I'm not busy doing that, I also do my own artwork, which has been displayed in galleries and things like that. So primarily I paint. That's really my genre. But I don't try to limit myself to just painting.
Oh, okay. Got it. So the painting is a primary kind of thing, but there's just, as we were reading before and sharing, just a huge in your bio here, all these different expressions of your creative art. Now, it makes me wonder, at what age did you know that you wanted to be an artist?
I guess when I was probably about 8 or 9, I can remember very clearly my grandmother and my grandfather bought me this little blue beret that you would see the Parisian artists wear, and I had one of those, and around that age I just kind of played pretend with an easel, and that's what I did. And I started saving my money when I was 11 years old in a big plastic Coke bottle to travel to Paris because I was going to see all these great artists. So I think that I just was born with the feeling that creativity was and art was going to be in my future.
Yeah, okay. Wow, all right. So at 11 you were saving up to go to Paris. I'm just kind of wondering, would you share a little bit about what were some of the challenges that you faced in becoming that artist that you're talking about?
Well, at 11, you don't really realize how much it's going to cost to go to Paris. So eventually that money became part of my car when I turned 16. And I didn't make it to Paris until I was in my early 20s. But I guess the biggest challenge as an adult looking back at it was convincing people that being an artist and being a creative person does have worth. And the starving artist mentality that is out there, it doesn't have to be perpetuated. And that's one of the things that I like to focus on, especially when I'm life coaching young artists or even just talking to young artists themselves, because I think that it's really important for them to know that there is a home for them. And it doesn't have to be this idea that, oh, you're an artist, well, you must not make any money, or, oh, you're an artist, that's really cool. It's either one or two responses, and I like to perpetuate the better response, which is, hey, let me show you a world that you didn't see before, and yes, you can make a living out of doing it.
Ah, well, that's certainly exciting, and it makes me curious. You were kind of giving some of the chronology of 11, and then the money that you're saving to go to Paris becomes a car at 16, and then you're finally in your early 20s. You did manage to get to Paris, and of course it leaves a little bit to the imagination of that period between, say, 16 and your early 20s when you go to Paris, about the development of your art as well as sustaining yourself, because you went from an 11-year-old with a dream to a 16-year-old with a car, and then the bigger money that it took to go to Paris and finance that trip. So I don't know if that was money you earned or if it was a gift to you, and if it was money you earned, what did you do with your art or with your time that allowed you to become this creative person who could also sustain yourself so you weren't the starving artist?
Well, I think that, after 16 and being in that age group and finishing up high school, it's a very difficult time for everyone. And prior to that, having grown up in a very challenging family that had a lot of dysfunction in it, helped to create that artist in me, because the creativity led to my expression, which led to me not self-destructing. And as I graduated high school, I really didn't know what I was going to do, but I did have a really great job that was a part-time job that got me through college, and it was a, you know, humdrum kind of, here I am, I'm doing this job. I did it for 5 years. I managed to get myself through school and save some money, and but I just really wasn't fulfilling my passion. It was more of a, you know, I guess what you would call now, like a 9-to-5 job.
And primarily, you got a degree, did you say, Elise, that it got you through school?
I got my degree. I got an associate's degree because I was unclear of which route I wanted to go. But I knew that I wanted to do art, and I just wasn't clear which way. And so I got my associate's degree in art, and then as my graduation present to myself, I took myself over to Europe. So it wasn't a gift. I worked for everything that I was able to do. I've always worked, sometimes 2-3 jobs. So that mentality was something that I needed, that starving artist mentality was something I needed to grow out of in order to convince other people that it could be possible. And it took a very long time to do that. And one of the things that I like to educate people on is that it doesn't have to be that difficult. But for me, it was.
Right.
So now, there I am at 22, yeah.
You're mentioning something that I think has some real value. Because as the show goes on and people take a look and get more acquainted with you, and of course, for people that don't want to wait till we get to this part, you could go, there's a website, http://followyourart.biz. Is that correct, Jolene?
Yes.
Okay, so that, folks, will give you a chance to begin to explore some of the creative talent. And what I want to be able to do, because we're here wanting to be of value, to help in do some inspiring. So here's someone that from early on, age 8, 9, when a garment was given to you, an artist garment, that you said, hey, this is for me. And then at 11, you know, it's like I'm going to Paris. So you were definitely inspired. Well, something took place, because instead of the starving artist syndrome, where people are so creative but not able to take care of themselves, you did something, and that's really one of the important gifts that you have to share. You spoke about, well, you did this mundane job, and we don't know what that was, but, of course, that may be of interest. What's more important is what inspired you as this creative artist that's very driven and passionate to do something mundane to take care of your financial needs. That's a key piece of inspiration, because we need some way to be inspired to go on, even if we're not immediately able to fulfill our dreams. And you did that.
Yes, and I'm about to tell you how I did that.
Yeah, how'd you do it?
Okay. So when I hit the age of 22 and I had gone, you know, I had gotten my associate's degree, everything like that, I had come back and I had started working a little bit in theater and painting, like as a painter's assistant. And I still had my mundane job, and it really was just working with a mail carrier situation, you know. So it's really not important what the job was. It was the fact that it was mundane. What the issue was. So I...
You were a mail carrier?
I'm sorry?
Did you say you were a mail carrier?
I worked, like, in the parcel service. So
the parcel?
Yeah.
Okay.
So here I was, not doing very much with my creativity at all, very confused. I had this very dysfunctional upbringing. I had very low self-esteem, and I found myself in a depression. And it was a pretty bad depression. It took a lot out of me emotionally, mentally, just as it would anyone. And instead of taking that situation and ending my life or being in a position to end my life, I turned it around. And the way that I turned it around was, well, for me, it seemed like it was one singular event when I look back on it, but it, in reality, it was a lot of different things that happened. But basically, I was dealing with the aftermath. In my early 20s, I was dealing with the aftermath of this childhood that, you know, had been so challenging. And kind of like a bomb went off. And here I am at, like, 22, looking around going, wait, I want this dream so bad, and I don't know how to get it, and I'm stuck. And that got me depressed, and I'm just stuck, and what do I do? So and I started, you know, I was more depressed, and eventually... It just, like I said, it seemed like a singular event to me. I was on a lot of different medications, and I had been, you know, seeing some people to help me and everything like that. And it had landed me in the hospital, and there were some really great people that came into my life around that time as well. But primarily, there was one person that really changed me. Back when I was 15, I met the pastor of my church. My mom made me meet him, and I was very unhappy about meeting him because I didn't want to do that, and I wasn't interested. But this man was so filled with absolute and loving kindness, and his belief in me made me believe in myself. And around the same time that all this other stuff was happening, he passed away. So there was a lot going on that kind of, you know, grouped into why things happened the way that they did. And like I like to tell people, I'm not really interested in how you got there. I'm interested in how to get out of there. So one night I was at home, and I just distinctly remember looking at myself in the mirror. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I had woken up from a dream. And I went into the bathroom to get a glass of water, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was just like, what? Who am I? What has happened? And where did I go? And I just realized, like, something clicked in me. And this man that, you know, was so, the pastor at that church, that was such a dynamic figure in my life, was still guiding me. I really feel that he was spiritually guiding me. And I just was like, this is a spiritual issue. I need to get, like, myself together. This can't happen this way. This isn't my life. This is my life. And I don't want it to be over, and I don't want to not live it. And that was a pivotal piece in the puzzle, because it was through this person's kindness that many years ago that led me to believe in who I was. And even when it was so bad, I remembered that. There was a little part of me, and that part was just enough to get me going. And after that initial realization, I went back to this making these lists. I had started making these lists of what I wanted to do. Like, Paris was on my list. I wanted to go there. And I went back and I made a list of 30 things to do before I turned 30. And that list became then the next part of the story, which, you know, led me up into my 30s. And that whole entire situation that occurred with the depression and you know, everybody has these important people that come into their lives, but that whole entire situation woke me up. And
right. I was like, now, I'm curious about something, Jolene.
Yeah.
You've mentioned that there was this individual in your life, this pastor, and he had just so much loving kindness, and he inspired you when he was alive, and he passed on, and then you remembered him, even after he had passed on, and that memory helped sustain you during some rough times. Now, that's interesting because, as an artist, you know that people are multisensory. There's the visual component. We can make up pictures in our minds. We can hear sounds in our mind. We can talk to ourselves. When we recall a memory, there can be all sorts of components. We might even have some internal feelings or kinesthetic components where there might be a warmth or a fuzziness or who knows what, different kind of tactile internal components that create an experience. So it's certainly great that you had a way of remembering it, and because this was so important I don't know if you're able to actually pause for a moment and think back when you were recalling this loving, kind pastor. What was it that was about that experience? How did you call that to mind? Did you see a picture of him? Did you hear his voice? What were the components that actually brought this vividly to you in a full way that helped to sustain you when you were facing big challenges?
I think one of the biggest things was, I mean, as you said, like visually, that's major for me. That's how I interpret everything. When somebody talks to me, I see pictures. And with this specific person, you know, he really took a broken me then and really helped me. He just believed in me. And I thought, wow, if somebody can believe in me, then surely, you know, I could believe in somebody. But I remember distinctly what that time was during his funeral. He was, I remember going in there. I didn't want to go, and it was the first funeral that I had ever been to that, like, somebody close to me had passed, and it was, like, the closest person to me, and, you know, I mean, this was a person that really took time with me and honed. His brother was an artist, a photographer, and he helped hone that skill in me, and, you know, he valued, I think that's what it was, he valued me, and he showed me how to value myself. And in that moment, when I remembered everything, I made a promise to him that day at the funeral. I saw him, and it didn't look like him. I saw the body, but it just didn't look like him. And I thought, well, that wasn't him because his spirit's gone. And I made a pact to myself that day that I would set out to at least change one person's life the way that he changed mine. And I never forgot that, even though it might have left my mind here and there with everything else going on. I never forgot that promise that I made, and that became very integral in me fighting and going on.
Sure. And when you said that you remember him visually, and I'm just thinking, I don't know if that was just like a picture that would be a still image, or if it was like a movie where he was possibly there and you were seeing him through your own eyes, or if it was you and him together and you were seeing the two of you together. What kind of representation was it of him and that really was so passionate, so inspiring for you?
I guess the main thing, and I'm really big about this anyway, were the way, like, his eyes. Like, I think the eyes tell everything. And when you're asking me, like, what kind of image or visualization was it, when I was looking in that mirror, I remembered, like, almost like short little clips of moments of him looking at me and saying to me, like, I need to talk to you. Or, you know, Jolene, you can't behave that way. Or, you know, just instructing me. And in his eyes, I could see that he really cared. Like, it was coming through. And so it was in these, like, short little clips that happened very quickly. It wasn't, like, a still image. No.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the reason I'm asking you for this detail, Jolene. And I want you to you know that, of course, I want acknowledge that you found a method for being inspired. Someone had demonstrated loving kindness to you, and then they passed on. What you did was you found a way for you that was significant enough to really ground you or to connect you to that loving kindness that was no longer there in the physical person, but was there fully and completely in such a way. And one of the things that you just described is you took a series of experiences, and you say, like, little film clips of this person demonstrating different times of loving kindness. Sometimes it might have been a positive comment. Sometimes it might have been a statement about the way to improve some of the behaviors or actions or thought processes, coaching that he was doing for you. And that that series of film clips, when you would play that in your mind and see those, that was reconnecting you. And so it makes me curious, as you've become a coach, as you've done, and is like probably some people may not have had a pastor like you did, but I'm guessing that even in the midst of a pretty hard life, they had some number of experiences where they were brief, but there was some loving kindness. And what kind of fun might it be for you to not help others to create for themselves their own little film clips that would be may not be the same person. It might be a film clip, and it may have 5 or 10 different people in it who are still demonstrating some form of this loving kindness, because you know how powerful that is at helping people, huh?
Yes, most definitely. And, I mean, there were other things, too. You know, during that stint, there was numerous dreams. Like, I'm a very big dreamer, and literally, like, in my sleep. And I get a lot of interaction and closure and different things through my dreams, like many of us do, I guess. And he had come to me in my dream state a couple of times, too. And it was like he was working overtime to really help me, you know, through that period. And I'm sure if he was here, he would say, I don't deserve any of that credit. But it really, I think that what it really came down to, you know, you can have people like that. Yeah, that's true. And you know, those dreams that I had of him are very, very real. I can still see them, and I have the ability to create them on a canvas if I like, and I think that that's really cool. But when everything's said and done, your desire to be, your desire to live, and your desire, just like I said, to live is what changes you. And
right. Oh, okay. Your desire, definitely. And that's something so important. It'll be interesting. I don't know if you've ever, you said you're so creative and draw so many beautiful things, works of art. Who knows? I don't know if you have done ever these things with the pastor and his interactions with you. That might be an interesting series, because it really changed your life and helped you to stay strong in the midst of challenges. Now, something else, I'm so curious, because we mentioned that you're certified in feng shui, and how does, I'm curious, how does that tie in with your artistry?
Okay, well, it kind of all works together, because especially with the feng shui, through this, the beginning point was really at the age of 22 when I had that switch of, like, I need to live my life. And I started getting into, things started coming to me about more visualization and stuff like that, and actually being able to utilize, instead of going against myself and trying to be what everybody else wanted me to be, to just accept myself and go, I'm an artist, I take things visually. Well, what better way to utilize the visual aspect of things than through feng shui? I mean, but it's the art of placement. And when, even if your space or what you're around isn't as great as you would want it to be, and you want to be in a better place, like, you can change that. You know, you can visually change that, and that will actually bring up the vibration, which will actually help you mentally, spiritually, emotionally. It has so many different benefits. And because everything, I literally look at everything I do as, like, a piece of art. And, like, in my house, when it's feng shuied, and every little area is, like, a piece of art. You could take a picture of it. You could replicate it. It's just... it's just who I am. Like, I can't even help it. And the feng shui, I think, is a really, especially like the vision boards and things like that, are integral, because we need to learn how to harness our ability to visualize. When I was that kid and I had that beret on my head and I was painting on my pretend easel, what was I doing? I was creating, designing my life. And then I only could design it so far, and then I had to live some of it and then figure out, oh, this is working, this isn't working. And that's, you know, what it's about. It's about the design of your life through the life coaching and the feng shui and the art, and realizing it's a huge responsibility. When you take a blank piece of canvas and you apply paint or whatever, what medium you want to use, to that canvas, you're creating a world. What do you think you're doing every single day when you wake up? You're doing the same thing, just in a different way. And that's why the feng shui is important, because you need to surround yourself with things that are going to bring you up, not keep you down.
Ah, okay. So that's certainly important. I appreciate knowing that. And then something ended up leading you into life coaching. And I wonder how that ties into the artistry.
Well, the life coaching, you know, was really spawned by that individual that really helped me. I had some friends that were just, you know, saying to me, Jolene, you should really look into being a counselor. And I thought, oh, I don't know that I necessarily want to do that because I'm an artist. And I thought, well, you know, I could become a life coach and then I could coach artists. And that, you know, primarily what I focus on is young artists, and just people who want to develop their creativity. But that's really how that tied into it, because I get a lot of enjoyment out of helping other people, and without really investing the time into becoming a, you know, counselor or something of that nature, then the life coaching seemed a better way for me to be able to reach people and also share my story, because I think that the story of how I became who I am is pretty important, and I think that people are very motivated by hearing it, and as they should be, because it really wasn't that easy. It took a lot to get through it, but on the other end of it, it's all working out quite beautifully.
Okay. Well, that's exciting, and to see those two things coming together, so people can, of course, go to that website, the followyourart.biz, and begin to learn about you and the art that you've created, and then to realize that you've also brought into that, you can help counsel or coach on some feng shui aspects of life coaching that you've studied, and so that you can talk to a person about their situation. This is very unique, because hardly anywhere that I know could you go to someone who could talk to you about the quality of the space that you're in, talk to you about some of the key aspects of your life, and then on top of it, not only give you good guidance, but create some artistic forms for an individual or for a company that would be a total reflection of some of the goals or some of the wonderful aspirations of that person or that company.
Right.
That's pretty amazing.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean
Go
to
ahead.
Cut you off.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you'll see on my website as well that, you know, there is, I do feng shui art, and I do feng shui photography. I have traveled to over 15 different countries, and I have, I'm like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, like just oozing out the sides. The creativity is just out there. But the feng shui, so for example, you know, if you wanted to integrate more prosperity into your life, I could have a conversation with you and create an art piece that would allow you to be able to bring that into your space on a more personal level. And I also work with sacred geometry. I do sacred geometry paintings that really work on a subconscious level to integrate new things that the people want into their life. So they come to me with a desire. I want to create more love in my life. And through a series of conversations, I'm able to capture the image of what that looks like to them, and then it's for them in their home and brings up the vibration. It helps them. It helps me. It helps everyone. It's a win-win situation. Yeah.
Wow.
But well, it's a big responsibility to, you know, to, as an artist, and I don't know that enough people recognize that they themselves are artists as well. And I like to challenge people to bring that out because it's so important. It, you know, I believe that the creativity that got me through those years really did get me through those years. If I hadn't had really had that outlet, I can't imagine where my life would be now.
And the outlet is what, your artwork?
The art, yeah. Most definitely the art and the writing.
Oh, okay.
It became the outlet for the things that I couldn't get out when I was so upset and sad, and, you know, and most of that was just upset and sad, but now I'm happy, so I get to create happier things. But at the time, it was, you know, it's a visual record of what occurred in my life, and I think that it's really great to be able to have that to look back and say, wow, you know, that's where it was, and this is where I am now. And, you know, and as I said, I had that list of 30 things to do, and on that list, becoming a life coach was one of them, and also becoming a working in movies, seeing my name in the film credits was on that list. So everything ties together. It just seems like it's a lot of information for a short amount of time. But
right. Well, and now this list of 30 things, you created that in your 20s, right?
I did. Yeah, and now I'm on my 40 list.
Yeah, now, and because you said you were 22 before you went to Paris. Had you created the list before you went to Paris?
No, I had like a couple things that I had wanted to do, but I didn't come up with an official list of, you know, what everything was until after I was, you know, hospitalized and really struggling with some stuff. I kind of went back to the roots of that and then worked on that list and finished it out. And it helped me. Like I said, it really gave me something to focus on. And again, that visualization, you know, when I wrote this list, like, I visualized myself there, writing it down, visualizing. They're so important. And I think that that's what I was doing even before I knew that's what I was doing. So as I learned more, I could actually articulate what process was going on in my life at that time.
Okay.
Oh, and I wrote a book about it.
Yes? What book is that?
Yeah. It's called 30 Alternate Routes, and it's on my website. It's a very short story about the experiences that led up to that list. And, yeah, so, and there's some pictures and images in it of different places that I've been and some more intimate description of what I'm telling you here.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I see on the homepage of that website, followyourart.biz, that it has a place here on the right-hand side, the books, and that's where we can check out that. And you've got a couple of other books, I'm understanding.
Yeah. The other two are, they're basically the one that's called Maps is a collection of some of my artwork along with some of the poetry that I write, and I've integrated the two worlds together in that book. And then the other book is a recent one that I just did, which is about seeing our ability to visualize creates our reality. And there are a bunch of photographic images that my husband and I have compile together and put on the website just to give people a different perspective. But, you know, I do want to say that, you know, the amount, when you get past everything else that we've been talking about, I think the most integral piece of this whole conversation is that it doesn't really matter where you've come from or what's happened in your life. It doesn't have to dictate your future. And by whatever means, whether it's life coaching, feng shui, painting, writing, whatever aspect, that you can live your best life that does not have to be determined by the things that have occurred to you. And I think that that's the point that I keep wanting to get across, is that we're here to live, and that's what we need to be doing. And the ability to kickstart your fire inside of yourself and keep yourself motivated, like I said, however you choose to do that, is really important. And we're here to help each other do that, like that person did for me.
Okay. Well, that's just beautiful that you would keep track of those different things and then pull this together into breakthroughs that have inspired you to go from stuck and depressed to now have vision boards, lists of things, and you're in your 30s now, if I'm understanding, about 34, right?
Yes.
And so I'd like to know, of that list of 30 things, how far did you get?
Oh, I did all of them. I did everything on the 30 things, and now I'm on the 40 things. So I've got, you know, I've got a list up to 60. There's, you know,
yeah,
motivating things and but yeah, I did do all of them. And you know what? I didn't do all of them in, like, my 30th birthday present to myself was to go to New Zealand and Australia. And I actually did that when I was 30 and a half. So, you know, it's okay. It's okay. I didn't, like, hit the mark as far as age. But, you know, I try to give myself a little leeway. But I think the thing that's just important is that, you know, I have big things on there, like New Zealand and Australia, and then I have small things on there, like, you know, take a karate class or, you know, go to the ballet. Just things that remind you of the beauty that's around you is what, and the fact that you're here, that you're living, and you are not meant to be going and into, you know, this humdrum life and becoming part of, you know, like a drone. It's not supposed to be that way. You're supposed to be here, you're supposed to be living, you're supposed to be enjoying every moment that you can. So that's why,
uh-huh,
you know, the list now is like, okay, I got this list down, it's good. And I just keep, you know, I play with it. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do that. So,
and how often did you look at your list, or did you take time and visualize different things and not just write it down? What was it, once you made your list, that helped you to stay on track?
Well, at first, before I knew about visualization, feng shui, and all that other happy stuff, I actually wrote it out, and I just tacked it up by my computer. That was it. I didn't do anything else. And then in my later in my 20s, when I realized about, I was introduced to feng shui and everything like that, I was like, oh, maybe that's why all this is working. Maybe this has a big thing to do with it. And I think that, you know, we have been talking about rerouting, you know, rerouting the brain. And, you know, through that depression, that's, you know, this was one of the things that helped me to reroute my thoughts, because they were so used to going into, oh, no, you know, this mentality of lack, which is, there's not enough love, there's not enough money, there's not enough this, I'm a starving artist, this isn't going well, this isn't good, was like trying to take those thoughts and actually reroute the way through the brain in order to create a better life. That's what I did. It sounds so easy, right?
Yeah. And they're crazy like a fox. And that's pretty smart there. Now, I'm just wondering, what would you say? You mentioned the list, and of course, I guess during some of this time, you know, through the 20s, and I guess it's about a 12-year period from 22 that you went to Paris, but you said that just doing Paris wasn't enough. You had to really make some other breakthroughs. So how did the artist in you serve you during all those years?
I personally believe that if any creative individual, which we're all creative, if we are not utilizing our creativity, that's where addictions start to come in. And this is just my personal belief, and that in order for us to be healthy, we need to create. So as an artist, how that served me all during that time was that it did keep me motivated. It did keep me going. As other things faded off and floated away, I really think art history is riddled with great artists. Like Van Gogh is the first one that comes to mind who, you know, was considered kind of crazy. And there's other ones that have been considered crazy too. And you know, here he was, a man that was living out his creativity, but he wasn't getting acknowledged for it in the way that he should have been getting acknowledged for it. So I think the way that it serves myself is that it keeps me healthy. And creating in a positive way is, I believe, necessary for our world.
I like that, and it kind of, as you were describing that, I'm thinking to myself, okay, left brain and right brain, that we all have two hemispheres of our brains, and we've had a lot of emphasis over a period of time in our culture on the left brain, on the order and the organization and the work and the making industry, building businesses, those kinds of things, showing up for work on time, pound that nail, type that letter, whatever. And at the same time, other cultures, other parts of the world, people, same human species, putting more to use some of their creative aspects of the right brain. And so you're talking about how that part has been really, really helpful to you. And I thought to myself, people don't often pause and think about, here's this body that is going on, and we stand there and we look in the mirror and we look about the same, or you know, in 5 minutes you go back, or the next day you look at yourself, it looks like the same person. And what we're not thinking is, well, there's been about 50 million or so many skin cells that have been created, new organs within the body created. So this creativity is going on innately within us, and it's so sweet to see, Jolene, how as you've honored that innate creativity and put it to use, how your life has become a blossoming affair that's joyous. And so here you are taking to heart that innate thing that is going on within us, is new cells being created, body being replaced, and it's a combination, because there's the birth of something beautiful, and then there's the order in which it comes into harmony so that the body is orderly and organized. So it is a combination, and it's interesting how you are combining both your beautiful art and the ability to stay organized so that you've created work for yourself in the movie industry, in the TV industry, all of these things. This is both left and right brain that are working together for you.
Yeah. Oh, I think that what you said is very important. We are creating all the time. All the time. Our bodies are doing it without us even realizing they're doing it. And I think most of the time when people hear the word creativity or art, they just cringe. I mean, usually I get people to go, oh, I can't even draw a stick figure. Really? Okay. Well, I don't, you know, I'm sure that maybe you can't draw a stick figure then, but maybe you can do something else. Maybe you're creative with numbers as an accountant, or maybe you're creative with, actually creative with music, or maybe you're creative in a different way, but it's the art, like the art that brings it together, and it's the art of doing something, the art of business that makes corporations. It's the art of anything that we do that creates what it is. It's the art of forgiveness that allows us to keep going on. It's the art of words that allows us to be able to read paragraphs. And it's the art of everything. It's all around us, all the time. And it's always, always happening. The creating is always happening. I'm really glad that you reminded me of because it is going on regardless. And I think that I'm just one of the fortunate ones where I actually get to physically, you know, put it out there, like, in a painterly way, but that by no means means that other people aren't artists themselves. We're all that. And it's okay.
Right. Yeah, just different ways it's being expressed, and that's so beautiful that you've studied a number of techniques so that when people get in touch with you, they can not only see art of yours and possibly want to have that or commission you to do art for them, but that they can turn to you because of your expertise in guiding yourself through some tough times to a beautiful life and continuing to create and continuing to set goals for yourself and use vision boards. So you are a living example of someone following the principles, and you're doing it just so beautifully, not only in managing your life, but also in the work that you're offering other people when they come to you for coaching. This is pretty fun.
Yeah, I enjoy it. And, you know, the best part about it is any of the, you know, the monies received for any of my services or art pieces or anything like that are given back to projects that I'm creating for autism and domestic violence and a couple different genres. So it's all going back to help the greater good, which is really what I'm about. And I recognize a lot of other people are about that as well. And I think that, you know, sharing that is so important.
Yeah. Well, gosh. Jolene, it's just exquisite that you've taken time out of your busy schedule to visit with myself and our listeners here today. I just want to thank you so much for all you're doing and remind people to go visit Follow Your Art. You think it's Follow Your Heart. You've heard that expression. Well, we took the H out, just like taking hell out of the way. Now we have followyourart.biz. And so right together are the words art and biz with a little dot between them. That's pretty sneaky of you.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'm very flattered. It's been a really great experience.
Oh, well, you just are a blessing, and we want to see you and thank you so much for helping me and my listeners to learn more and to be able to access you for more resources. I just wish you a wonderful success, and just thank you for taking time to be on the show.
Thank you as well.
Man, you're welcome. And to you, Jolene, to my beloved listeners, and until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now. Let go.